folks, you're listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman here in beautiful Charlottesville, Virginia, and in the lovely studios of the Charlottesville Radio Group with the world-famous Mike Biseglia. Just in case anybody caught the perfect game at UVA, you heard Mike calling that game. And I think from my interviews, he was inspired, and he really did well on that. So we're here with Mike. When you look at SeavillePodcast.com, which is where you'll find us, you'll see all of Mike's great sports things. So go on to Seaville Podcast, of course. That's where you found us in the first place. And you can also, once you're there, go to chewfat.net and see our blog and see some of the upcoming interviews that we have. Remember that Chew Fat is the podcast where you'll get some raw and unscripted interviews with food-related personalities, people that are successful and who have just shown an extraordinary mentality and perseverance in the food-related art. And tonight, you know, we're lucky enough to have Francoise Villeneuve, who I got to know a few years ago when she got married, and I happened to cook the food for her and her husband, and it was a great moment for me. And Francoise lives in New York City, and for a lot of chefs and folks who want to become a chef, New York City is one of the meccas that they go to try to break in, and it's kind of like Broadway, you know. Actors go to New York City, and they hope they can break in, and food people do the same thing, and it's not the easiest way to do it, and I'm in awe of people who do. So, first of all, Francoise, how's your night?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to have you on here, and I think that you have a fascinating story about, you know, how you get started and everything. Can you do me a favor and give people kind of a bio, a verbal bio of your culinary career?
Sure, yeah. So briefly, when I came to the States to study at Columbia, I was studying French literature, and I sort of didn't really know what I wanted to do when I grew up.
Nobody does.
I was sort of looking forward to doing something vaguely related to literature, but I wrote for the paper, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I graduated, and I thought, well, you know, academic publishing sounds like something that might be interesting. So I did that for a year, and then promptly discovered that was not what I wanted to do at all. So it was a bit of a trial and error deal. And then I thought, well, what do I really, you know, what gets me really excited? You know, and I'd grown up surrounded by, you know, two parents who cooked really well and loved great food, not necessarily, you know, fancy food, but but just really well prepared fresh food. So so I got to thinking about, you know, maybe this is actually a career option.
Right.
That was when I met Edward. So at that point I thought, well, I just want to, you know, kind of jump in at the deep end and you know, make a few mistakes and get started and see if this is something that's going to work for me. So so I worked for about 6 months at Park Avenue Cafe in New York. I was on a garde manger at that point, so you know, cutting up a lot of vegetables, you know, cutting my fingers a lot, generally making an ass of myself, but it was amazing. You know, I was surrounded by ingredients I didn't necessarily know. I wasn't that familiar at that point with things like Hudson Valley foie gras. I sort of came in as an English person thinking, like, what Hudson Valley, how is that foie gras? Confusing. So it was a great opportunity to kind of learn a little bit more about American food. And then I ended up in culinary school after that. Worked in sort of various restaurants in Chicago and New York for about 2-3 years after that. And then I had always had a background in writing. I was a part of the creative writing program at Columbia. I'd written for the school paper. And so I thought, well, why not combine two things that I really love doing?
Sure.
I started a blog. I worked at Time Out New York for a little while, and then I started freelancing. And that seemed to allow me the flexibility to write for lots of different sorts of publications. So I remain New York based.
Sure.
And really like hearing about people's stories, basically.
What did your parents think when you decided that, okay, you know, I went to Columbia, you know, a little Ivy League school, and now I'm going to go to culinary school? How'd they feel about that?
My father always enjoys a good meal.
Right. that
so
helps.
He was sort of excited about the prospect of, you know, of getting a chef caliber meal, I think he thought.
That's awesome.
Without having to pay for a night out. So it was that. But no, they were supportive. But, you know, I think hesitant like any parents would be.
Right. So when you were a kid in Great Britain, is that where you're from?
Mm-hmm.
So when you were a kid there and you were growing up and you said your parents cooked a lot, did you have any inkling that you might go into, you know, some kind of culinary-related field, you know, even if it was writing or cooking? Or did that just happen by chance, like you said? Was there anything?
It was expected that we help my mother in the kitchen. My dad loved cooking, but he worked really long hours.
Sure.
He was a journalist, so we didn't. He wasn't always there when we were cooking. But I think just the experience of being around food a lot and being expected to know how to do really basic things like cut up an onion was. You know, it sort of started there. You know, obviously I was a kid. I probably wasn't interested in food until the age of about 10. So before then, it was all like pasta.
Sure.
And that was about the only thing I could get excited about. You know, other than an ice cream sundae. But,
yeah.
Everybody
gets excited about an ice cream sundae.
That's
the international food, you know. Well, cool. I have, did you, I know you worked for some pretty nice chefs. Can you name some of the people that you worked for over your time period?
I worked for a while at Aquavit in New York under Marcus Samuelson, but he was opening up another restaurant at the time. So it was actually, under his executive chef.
Right.
And then I worked in Chicago as an extern, which is sort of culinary schooling for free labor.
Right.
an amazing opportunity at the same time, don't get me wrong. So while I was in Chicago, I worked for Missy Robbins at Spiaggia. And then the sort of uber chef of that restaurant is Tony Manfano, who's been nominated and won numerous awards. So he's sort of does an amazing job at upscale Italian cuisine. So I worked very briefly for Fabio Trabocchi at Fiamma.
Sure. Very briefly. Now, real quick, did his restaurant, is it still around?
It's not, no. I don't want to get into it too much.
Yeah, sure.
from my understanding, it wasn't anything to do with him.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the financial crisis hit, and I believe it was owned by Steve Hansen and be our guest.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, he was sort of making, I guess, tough restaurateur decisions about what to do with his spaces.
Yeah, that's
so
tough.
Unfortunately, it closed, and a lot of talented chefs lost their jobs. But But I think even, you know, even with the economic crisis, there were, you know, if you're a skilled chef, it's not like you're going to be out of a job for too long. Sure. It's really the people further down the ranks that suffer. So,
well, I think that Favio, people know here in Virginia, you know, from Maestro Northern Virginia. And in Tyson's Corner. And that was a fabulous, fabulous restaurant. Everybody hated to see him go to New York. So, but anyway, you had a chance to work with him, and he is kind of a maestro, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's mentored some pretty major up-and-coming Italian chefs, both in D.C., and they've all sort of scattered and made this for themselves now. And yeah, he's just amazing at what he does. I think he does sort of very Italian or very, very French touches to his Italian food. It's very, very, very sumptuous, and it's not sort of about that hearty tuck into a plate of really good pasta. It's more kind of, I don't want to say more sophisticated than that, because it implies that that a plate of really good pasta isn't sophisticated. I think it is, but it's it's more about having a really, really special occasion type of meal.
Right.
So he's just still kind of the master at that. And I understand he's opening a new place up in D.C. soon, so that will be exciting.
Oh, good, good. I like his food. So when now you know you're doing the writing, and how do you equate the cooking and the writing together? Is there a common thing for you there? Something that, in your experience in the kitchens, that carries over to writing?
I mean, absolutely. I worked with other writers over the course of venturing into journalism.
Sure.
And some of them do not have culinary training. Some of them are just amazing journalists who ask the right questions and do their research. But I think it does color the way that I write and the questions that I ask, because I've never been an executive chef, so I won't, obviously I'm not someone with the experience of, say, you, or the experience of, Melissa Close. But I think having kind of been behind the trenches, however briefly, has helped me understand what it means to be a chef, or at least get some kind of idea. I love food. I mean, I've written about a couple of other things, kind of French film festivals or whatever, but my focus remains food, and I think that's just because it's what I'm really passionate about.
Do you think you have a particular style of writing? Like a MFK Fisher or, some of these other food writers, do you have your own style, do you think? Or?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I try and read other writers as often as I can, the kind of the greats of the major publications and all of that jazz. But I still, I love the style of a Tony Bourdain, but that's not my style.
Right.
It doesn't sort of come across as true. And I think
I can't see you as being
when
irreverent.
You're reading something that's sort of not somebody's natural voice, it shows a little bit.
Right.
So I try and just kind of write in a way that feels natural and not filled with too many big words.
Yeah, sure. So do you with writing, is it kind of the same as trying to work your way up and to become a chef? Do you have certain goals and ways that you practice? I mean, do you feel like you just get better with time? Is there a certain way that you would practice being a writer?
I think having a really amazing editor helps. And I've, you know, been fortunate enough to work with some really great writers as well, you know, kind of both unknown and slightly better known. And I think just being around other writers and seeing how they approach a piece from its inception and from the original idea to kind of executing it, to hearing how they interview people, that all sort of shapes, you know, your development. And I think you start to notice things that you don't do so well and things that you do a little better and try and, you know, just try and kind of develop yourself and be open to criticism. So I think it's a bit like working in a kitchen in that respect, because, you know, it's never fun when you're starting out to hear that you're not cutting things evenly, but you have to kind of, you know, swallow your pride and understand that, you know, they're not saying these things to be hurtful. They're saying these things because there's a right way and a wrong way to do things.
So do you think you learned how to deal with criticism better from being with chefs than if you hadn't been?
Yes. I mean, some of my editors might disagree, but...
Do your editors throw things
at
you?
I think it's when you're first getting to know an editor and you're kind of feeling each other out, you don't really know that person. You don't really know how to react to their particular style of criticism. But I think, you have to, you know, kind of take the criticism, because in the end, it kind of recognizing what you don't do well helps you develop. So,
sure. So, you know, you're out there now. You're in New York City, which is some people call the capital of the world, or, you know, one of the really best culinary areas. And, you know, there's some great food all through the country. And I know you've been traveling and looking at food from different states. Do you feel really kind of blessed being there, you know, being able to be around, you know, all that excitement?
I mean, you know, it is exciting, you know, being in a city with the diversity of New York. I like the fact that, you know, that we have a Brooklyn and that we have a whole community of people, you know, interested and excited about the revival of, you know, I don't know, artisanal salami that we have, you know, that we have.
I'm excited about that.
A New York-based pickle culture, and that we have all of these great things. And those are exciting, and I do cherish those. And, you know, and I love the New York food culture, I guess, more than necessarily the buzzed about place that just opened up this week and, you know, has a big celebrity chef name. That, you know, although it's sort of interesting academically, I think what's exciting about New York is, you know, the New York chefs that have kept things going and that are, you know, that are doing interesting things. So,
right.
But that said, I mean, it's been an amazing experience traveling throughout the U.S. and getting to know the regional food culture a little bit. So,
sure.
You know, being in Virginia was an amazing experience because, you know, the English, I don't think, are particularly aware of the fact that they do make great wine in Virginia.
Right.
You know, and that there are great chefs there. It's just not somewhere you hear about, and so it's, you know, it's always an enormous privilege to be able to discover probably what people in Virginia have known for a long time, which
right.
is that the food is pretty darn good.
You know, I think what's interesting, you know, here is there are a lot of folks that you know, have gone to chef school because they really thought they wanted to be a journalist. So they went to college like you. And so they're looking, you know, they're looking at this. Is there any thing that you could say to someone who's in school right now and wants to be a journalist or a food journalist that could, you think could help them? Is there the one thing that you've learned from your experiences that would inspire or help them become like you?
Well, you know, I don't know that anyone particularly would want to become like me, but I mean, you know, I've asked, you know, great journalists that I've come across who cover food, you know, what, how did you make it, you know, kind of how, tell me your secret type thing.
Sure.
And a lot of the time it's, you know, it's just that they've been slogging at it for a really long time, and made it one way or the other. But I'd say, you know, with the way that new media is developing, you have a possibility to have a piece of the market that you didn't necessarily have access to before. But the major publications, you know, as always, are going to be really difficult to get a position. I mean, you know, anyone trying to get a full-time position at the New York Times or New York Magazine is probably going to be a little bit disappointed. But having said that, you know, you can, you know, talk about or write about what you know. So maybe think about what you can talk knowledgeably about. So be it, you know, I don't know, Indian food. You grew up with, say, Southeast Indian cuisine, and that's kind of part of your upbringing. You can probably talk a lot more knowledgeably about, you know, that particular culture and their restaurants and their culinary traditions in your area than can, you know, someone off the street who doesn't have that background. So I think,
true enough.
You know, start with what you know about and go from there.
Yeah, true. So now, during your travels in the last couple of years, have you found anything in the United States that's particularly exciting? Is there a few things that you found that you might have been surprised by, and now all of a sudden you're like, I can't believe that, you know, we have this? Any aha things?
Other than the barbecue exchange.
Other than the barbecue exchange in Virginia. That's a joke, by the way.
I love that. Feels tucked in there. things like the small production artisanal cheeses in America. I lived here for a few years when I was little, so from when I was about 3 to when I was about 9. So briefly. But certainly when I was age, nobody knew about the fact that you had all these great producers, or maybe they just, you know, hadn't emerged yet.
Yeah.
But being able to get real, you know, Brie-Me-Rinded cheese is like it's just an absolute luxury for someone who's been having, you know, imported, slightly funky cheese from France. You now have, you know, producers here with a real sense of terroir and a real sense of place to their cheeses, so they're not just imitating, you know, say a European model, but they're, you know, kind of in their own identity.
Sure.
So that's something that's really exciting to see, whether it be in cheese or, you know, or what have you.
So. Sure. Sure. So what else do you hope to do? What kind of goals do you have for the future?
I'd love to explore wine writing a little bit more. I've written a few pieces about wine, but that's something that I haven't sort of made my focus. So I hope to do that at some point. I would love to, I said before, start with what you know, and as you go forward, it becomes obvious, you know, what your specialities are and what you kind of could do with building your knowledge on a little bit more. So I adore craft cocktails, but I don't know how to mix craft cocktails. So that's kind of the next hole that I hope to stop up at least momentarily. So.
Sure. So a book,
so
maybe?
I'm sorry?
A novel. Who killed the chefs of... No, that somebody did that. But, are you hoping to get into that film?
I have a few projects in the works. I don't want to reveal too much.
Don't reveal it. But just as long as we know, that's, you know, that's a goal. And And because I know, you know, you're really still starting out in your career, and I hope that people that listen to this will, you know, follow you and get to watch your journalist career blossom and be able to say that, you know, they followed you along the way, which is really cool. And I'm excited about it. I expect really big things out of you. So it's pretty neat. Is there anything else that you'd like to say to people that are listening?
No, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's great what you're doing. And I think you hear too much about the sort of celebrity chef side of things with all these cooking shows. But I think what's great about the interviews that you do is that you get to, you know, see a little bit of what it's like to actually be a chef. So, you know, with your interview with Melissa Close, you know, when she was talking about having to miss a relative's wedding, that's, you know, little things like that, I think, start to sink.
Sure thing.
When you have this romantic idea of what it's like to be a chef. So I think it's good to have that balance. You know, with a little dose of reality, so that you have a real appreciation of the craft of being a chef. So,
as chefs, we're excited about what you do because you know you take what people do for hours and hours and hours and put it out to the folks and in a way that you know has really helped to. Build awareness in this country because, you know, when I first got into cooking in the, you know, I'm not even going to say the 1822, no, I'm just kidding, in the early 70s, you know, people, American chefs, there were really not such a thing, you know, and I remember thinking this is going to change, and it's exciting for me to see it, and I'm thankful that you're there now on the forefront and writing. And I love the things you write, and I love your things that are coming out on Twitter with some of the articles that you attach. So what is your Twitter site? Do you have it on by hand? Offhand?
Yeah.
your tweet site?
My username?
Your username. See, yeah. I'm pretty hip with this stuff. I got to let you know.
So it's Francoise. That's F as in Frank, R A N as in Nancy, C O I S as in Sam, E _ V for Victor.
V for Victor.
Francoise _ V.
Got it. Got it. Well, we're going to send people to that and let them start following you because I've really enjoyed the things you send out in there. They give me great ideas and inspiration. So thank you very much for talking to me tonight. And, we're looking forward to letting the folks, you know, hear your voice.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, folks, you've been listening to Chew the Fat. You can find us at chewfat.net. We're, again, the podcast where we go straight to the heart of the folks that are behind the food and the wine scene. And hopefully you've been inspired and you just feel excited to get in the kitchen or to read or whatever. So thank you very much. Look for us at chewfat.net, and please sound out. Let us know what we can do better. Let us know what excites you. Thanks for listening.
It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record, and it was 2 years ago on the record which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there. There was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before.